Blog Talk Radio.
Stu, what's your motive?
And now on Blog Talk Radio, you're listening to Wine Talk with Stu the Wine Guru. Welcome to Wine Talk, now on its new day and time slot. Today, Wednesday, December 2nd at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Stu the Wine Guru, coming to you live from sunny Coral Springs, Florida, as I always do. Tonight's show is sponsored by Marquis Artisan Wines.
The Marquis Classic Series from Marquis Artisan Wines, a premium collection of sophisticated, high-quality Australian wines. Marquis Classic Chardonnay, Marquis Classic Riesling, Marquis Classic Shiraz, and Marquis Classic GSM. Look for Marquis Artisan Wines at your local wine retailer.
As you know, I'll take your calls anytime during the show at 1-646-381-4860 or email me your questions at info@stuthewineguru.com. I want to say thanks to all the listeners out there for getting the word out about my show. Welcome to all of you listening worldwide. I call that the power of the people meets the power of the internet. If you want to find out more about me, just Google Stu the Wine Guru. You can find the websites, videos, articles, and shows I'm currently part of. Speaking of articles and reviews, I'm writing wine articles and reviews for Yahoo and The Examiner, so look for those as well. I have also a Wine 101 series of videos that can be viewed on both YouTube or my website, so check those out. All right, let's talk wine. We've got a fantastic show for you tonight. My special guest will be Chris Cribb of Marquis Artisan Wines. They produce great value-priced wines from Australia, Argentina, Spain, Portugal, Italy, and California. Kind of something for taste. I'll have him on shortly. So call in and ask any questions you would like about his wines, vineyards, and the history of the company. Of course, the number to call in, 1-646-381-4860, or email me your questions at info@stuthewineguru.com. You can do that for Chris as well. Later in the show, my question of is, when you shop for wine, do you shop at the local wine retailer, online, or both? So get ready on the phone, get your fingers on the keyboard, and weigh in on that one. We'll talk about some industry updates in my segment called Heard It Through the Grapevine. After that, I'll give you my review of great value-priced wines. Today's wine is a great value from Napa Valley and around $30, so you'll want to stick around for that one. I'll make some red and white wine recommendations in my segment, Stu's Pick of the Week. Also, my new segment, starting on tonight's show, I'll be my restaurant pick of the week as well. So when you travel, I'll have a spot for you to go to that offers great food and great wine as well. So stay tuned for that. So since this is reaching a worldwide audience, I have expanded the scope of wine festivals and events to accommodate the world travelers out there. So stick around for my recommendations on where to go for wine and fun all around the world. All right. Let's see. But first, my special guest tonight, Marquis Artisan Wines in Kansas City, Missouri. Please welcome everyone, Chris Cribb. Can you hear me, Chris?
I can.
You there, Chris? Oh, fantastic. Well, great to have you here. I wanted to thank you and Marky Artisan Wines for sponsoring the show, and also want you, if you would, to enlighten listeners as to what it's all about. So tell us a little bit about Marky Artisan Wines.
Well, Stu, thanks very much for allowing us to be on the show today, and glad to hear you've got a few changes and new things going on with your format. I'm the head of Marky Artisan Wines, Marky Selections. We're a wine import company that has been operating in the U.S. for about 9 years now, and I joined the team from the start as one of the first people putting together the business plan. And what we've set out to do is to put as many great value products as we can. When I think of great value, I think of what I go and buy when I go to the wine store, and that's usually stuff between $10 and $25 together
right.
in a small portfolio that focuses on, bang for your buck, good value price, and going to different regions throughout the world to find that. So we've we've focused in on and started our business with a great winemaking tradition out of Australia. And
yes.
in the last few years, we've expanded from Australia to move into places that I think are the most strategic long-term growth areas for that value. And that includes Argentina, going into Portugal and Spain, and most recently into California and Italy. So.
Yes, I noticed. I think that's fantastic.
So that's a little bit about kind of where we've gotten started. We have a footprint that what I consider is we're a small company that's really doing big things. We produce and import about 25,000 cases a year, and
okay.
from a standpoint of where does that land on the bigger scale of things, that's probably about what some of the huge outfits down in Australia spill per year, but. It's also on a standpoint of what smaller independent producers, we're taking all of the production from some of our producers throughout the world. And it's all just based on finding things that I've found that, that are a great value for the money.
Yeah, you seem to have, it kind of, what's nice about get a variety of different wine producers, it's rare that they have the scope and the breadth that you guys have. It's kind of a nice broad brushstroke from a variety of different countries. Usually what you find is a focused, a more unifocal approach where people will just, wine producers will just stick to a region where they feel most. But I see, and from what I've tasted, I want to let everybody know I've tasted the wines and they're outstanding. They're great, great values. You seem to really, stretch it out and make really good indigenous to those region wines for the money. And I'll let you know, as well, I'm looking at, for everyone out there, the wines range from the, let's say, $12 range or $10 range, and really no higher than the $25 range, which if you listen to the show fairly often, I talk about great value price wines, and I kind of put it between, let's say, the $10 and $30 or $40. So you're right within that range. It's real nice. I wanted to ask, as far as the Italian wines, how did you get the affiliation with the Italian producer you did, the Quattro Leone wines in Piedmont? How did that work?
Sure. I have my home base out of Kansas City, Missouri, and
yes.
I have a partner here that is a former Harvard MBA that was actually out visiting some of his old colleagues in Italy, and he happened
mm-hmm.
to stay with the Marchese Giacomo Cattaneo in his villa in Piedmont, Italy. And
yes.
my winemaker from Australia is kind of a avant-garde person, so this is two different things going on at the same time. So I've got this person that stayed at this place in Italy, and then my winemaker from Australia actually was researching Nebbiolo production
mm-hmm.
in the Barolo region to bring down to Australia to produce in Australia. So something
okay.
completely different and something you're off the wall a little bit. But bringing those two together, I was able to, you know, start to research and to meet Giacomo Cattaneo, the head winemaker and owner of Castello di Gabbiano. And
yes,
we decided that after looking at what they were doing, as opposed to going into the Barolo Nebbiolo route, they just had this absolutely beautiful white and red wines, a blend of Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cortese, the white wine, and then a red wine that was 100% Barbera that we felt like would just be perfect table wines that to fall into that value price point. My winemaker from Australia brought back probably 25 other opportunities for us, and we looked at all of those as well. And, you know, each time we try to import something, we try to do that. We try to make sure that that wine not only is what we consider the most, you know, strategic, but also beats out its competition from the region. And the Quattro Leone wines did, and so therefore we decided to start the import and just recently launched our working with Quattro Leone at the Miami Wine Fair a few months back down in your neck of the woods.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it looks like I have a caller that's calling in here from, this is an international call. You want to take something here, Chris?
Sure, no problem.
Want to field the question?
Okay,
let's see what we got here. Let's see.
Yes, my name is Drake. I'm calling from London. My question is for Chris. Chris, do you think organic wines taste better than non-organic wines? I will take your answer offline. Thanks. Cheers to both of you.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Sure.
That was Drake. Okay. Thanks,
well, Drake,
for calling in.
You know, we have definitely, as a company, done a large focus on organic wines. And my particular take on organic wines is, number one, that the ability to do less in the vineyard or to take a minimalist approach, if you will, by not using pesticides or herbicides, to allow it to grow just as it would, and use a few different types of things like hormone traps to bring in and work with bugs in the vineyard, allow the vines and the wines themselves to just be a little cleaner, a little less mass produced. So
right.
To answer directly to the question, I don't think that organic wines are necessarily better tasting always than their non-organic counterparts. I have many wines that are in our portfolio, but I think that they do allow a winemaker to give a very true expression of the way the vineyard tastes. And,
right.
You know, if you have a vineyard that you want to showcase, that's a great thing. You know, in a lot of parts of the world, there's also, you know, they go more into blending. You know, say we're in Bordeaux,
mm-hmm.
and Bordeaux blends don't necessarily are usually a better mix at the end because of the counterparts that you put in there. But what I see in the organic world is a lot of people also don't necessarily get quite so far into. They don't necessarily even say that they're organic because they worry that they might need to do something if a catastrophe happens in their winery.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. A lot of people don't think about that.
I'm sure that, Stu, you've seen, you know, wines like Frog's Leap or something like that that is a great internationally known brand, and it's an organic
yes.
brand, but you don't see it on the label because they worry that in their California environment they might have to do something to control mildew one year.
Right. Well, the biodynamic label, basically, or, you know, if you look at like that, Gergich, a variety. There's a variety of different Bonterra and so forth in California that are biodynamic. I think, you know, if you look at the concept of doing so in making wine in that fashion, it kind of makes sense. I think. What people were a little scared, I say people, I mean winemakers were a little scared of. If you think about it, going back to the ages when wine was originally made, obviously there were no pesticides or anything else, so things were organically grown and made that way. The problem was is it didn't stay. the wine didn't stay long. It didn't give the end user that satisfaction for a long period of time. So I think now with the technology and the capability of in agriculture and viticulture of making wine and the advancements, we have a much better product. And taste wise, you know, I put up one versus the other. I put a non-organic and an organic, and I've had people do, you know, blind taste tests along with myself. You know, there is a difference in the taste. If your palate is trained, there definitely is a difference in the taste, and even untrained it is. However, you have to think of, you know, what you're accomplishing for the land and the vineyard and everything else surrounding it and part of it and the benefit, I think, all the way around as to the wine being produced. So I think it's, you know, there's a kind of a total approach to it that I think for the people that are doing it definitely appreciate it, and I think the consumers do. And in fact,
if I were to ask that same question to my winemaker Gustavo Calajori down in Argentina, and I have, his real take on it is that number one, he's being a shepherd to bring his old vine fruit into the winery, and because he's established himself with these, you know, 100% organic viticulture practices in his vineyards and in his winery, he feels like he's able to give the best expression of the fruit. But number two, you know, I think to your point just a second ago, in the last 20 years, there has been a real cleaning up of a lot of wineries that in their winery winemaking practices by a lot, you know, by almost, you know, technology and science, so that, you know, the winemaking that you had and the organic wines that you had 10 years ago are not the same as the ones you have now. Because,
not at all.
You know, they're cleaner, there's less oxygen that gets in them, so they do last a little bit longer. And most of them do have less sulfites, which I don't know which way I fall on that. I usually fall on the side of, you know, some people say sulfites give you headaches. I usually fall on the side that more sulfites, it's the histamines in wine that can give
exactly.
You headaches.
Exactly, exactly. I agree. Right. You know, there's the scientific studies that are done. I've done it on my show. I've talked about it. You know, I think it's people's reaction to wine in general. So what I wanted to let you know is that we have a call here from the 702 area code. Hold on 1 second. Let me get them on here. Want to take another question?
Sure, no problem.
Hold on.
Hi, my name is...
Okay. Go ahead, I hear you. Okay, your name and where are you calling from?
Vegas. Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. Hey, Vegas. All right. Hey, Chris, you got somebody from Vegas here. Okay.
Hey. Pick
hey,
a winner. Doing very well. What's on your mind tonight?
I wanted to ask you, of the wines that you produce, which is the toughest region to produce wine in?
Toughest region to produce wine in? Well, you know, each region that I bring wines in from and produce wines from seem to have their own thing that's like the biggest calamity that it can be. For example, in the last 3 years, I've had my vineyards down in Australia working through drought, and in addition to drought, there were some horrific bushfires in the Victoria region of Australia in 2009, early in the year, and you know the. So what do we worry about down there? We worry about the fires. We worry about, you know, the lack of water and drought. And so it becomes a thing that you have to work with on every vintage. On the flip side, over in Argentina, in my 2008 vintage, we had horrible hailstorms that came over the top of the Andes Mountains into Mendoza and ripped out and almost destroyed most of the Syrah crop we did for the 2008 vintage. So,
yeah, wow.
You know, so for each region, I seem to find that there's, you know, one indigenous thing. You know, up in I don't actually produce much wine up in in the U.S., but yeah, I know in northern U.S. they worry about frost. You know, early frost can wipe out a vintage very easily. The thing that's kind of the same about a lot of the vineyards that I work with is that most of them are a little higher elevation, which means that they're a little cooler climate. And, you know, if I were to go, which one is probably the hardest, the one that when I'm actually standing in the vineyard and I go, okay, this looks like these vines take a lot to be able to produce, is over in Yecla, Spain, where we do Bodegas La Purisma. In this vineyard, all of the wine, all the vines are actually spread about 2.5 meters apart. So, you know, you look at it's a small little bush vine, and it needs that much space to be able to go that far down in its root system to be able to get enough water. We don't do any irrigation, any of that. But each year the take out of the vineyard is less than 2,000 per hectare, so it's just small production.
I
hope that kind of.
I have to say that was good. I'm sorry, Chris.
I know that kind of goes into some other areas, but you know that's each one of them seems to have their own thing you got to worry about.
Sort of like both problems, sort of whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to tell you, Justin, that was a great question. I really have to tell you, you know, because a lot of people. You know, when they think about it, they just make the assumption that wine is produced and, you know, comes from the vineyard and, you know, they open it up and all their concern is to drink the wine and enjoy it. But, you know, to take the time to try to figure out, especially when you have, like I said earlier in the show, that breadth of product for regions, certainly as Chris, you were just talking about, they all have their different issues in growing, you know, growing the grapes and producing the wine. I appreciate it. Thank you, Justin.
Great show, by the way.
Oh, great. Thank you so much, Justin. Appreciate it.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you for being on with us there tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay.
Thanks again, Justin. Have a good one. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, so moving on to a couple of things I wanted to know as well. You were mentioning the Caligiore, the Reserve, the Bernarda. You know, that's an interesting varietal, because you don't find many producers putting out Bernarda, more so I'd say nationally. You know, you find it, like when you travel, of course, you do find it, it's easier to find, especially in Argentina, of course, it's accessible. But I was looking at that and you know, in having the Malbec and the Syrah, especially Syrah, that's another grape that you don't, and a varietal that you don't find from Argentina. You tend to find, and that's why I wanted to ask about them in picking that particular varietal, as well as the Bernarda, and making that accessible. What was the theory on that?
The one thing that my first foray into Argentina was very similar to how we kind of looked at Italy. You know, I actually went down for a week and looked through a number of vineyards, about 30 interviews with the different people before we started working with the Caligiore vineyards. And what I found was, number one, on the varietal side, a lot of this Bernarda, Syrah, and Cabernet, which we don't do as a straight varietal, but we do as a part of a blend with our Malbec on the Staccato, all were, for a number of years, just kind of lumped into what was the Argentinian red blend, and you know, as the growth of Malbec in the United States has been soaring, and other places in the world too, but in the United States in particular, it is actually probably the hottest red grape out there, and is going against all the trends for anything that's down in the economy, But as they started to, you know, focus in on the Malbec grape, a lot of the other smaller vineyards, you know, did the science and took the time to be able to figure out and start to vinify these other products, the Syrah, the Bernarda, by themselves. And, you know, the story of Bernarda that I take to, I've heard a couple different stories, but is that Bernarda is actually the same clone or the same grape as a grape that's grown in California called Charbono. And it has a just a nice rich flavor to it, but less of the tannins, a little bit more of that red fruit than the dark fruit you get it in the black fruits I think of in Malbec. And so when you know, when we were looking at you know, bringing that in, you know, we said, look, we don't necessarily want to compete against ourselves, but this wine is different. It's lighter, and what I found down in Argentina was that they specifically in their flights and their dinners, number one, if you go down to Argentina, go, because it's an absolutely beautiful place and your dollar goes a long way. But number two, they do these dinners that include four, five, six courses of different types of meats. And the Bernarda was the one that was served right after the, you know, you kind of have an aperitif at the first with a light white, a Sauvignon Blanc or a Tarantis. And then they got into the Bernarda as something that went with like the salads that also had meat on them. So everything was beef, beef, beef.
Everything had meat on it, yeah. So they had to have something that kind of went with it.
Yeah, just a little bit lighter. And so, you know, that's when we said we want to be on the front end, on the front of what we think is a unique new varietal that is probably going to grow in steam over the next couple of years. We said, all right, Gustavo, down in, you know, our vineyards down there, let's go ahead and we'll just vinify this one by itself, you know, show it off by itself because it is different from Malbec, and we've done really well with it. Syrah, kind of the same thing. Both of the vineyards we have are both over 30-year-old vineyards, so the grapes have been there for a long time, and they just have a nice expression of fruit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're 1,000% correct. In fact, you know, people have been talking about Malbec for a while, and my theory on the Malbec is the Malbec is to the U.S. market now, well, I'm going to say in about maybe 5 years or so, what the Merlot was about 15 or 20 years ago when it first really started. I really think it's just going to...
I hope not, because I'm selling a lot of it these days, but...
No, I meant it's growing in popularity. I think it's actually going to grow. What I was trying to get at is that, you know, Merlot is kind of solidified and cemented in people's drinking choices on a regular basis. I've seen it day in, day out. People love Merlot, and, you know, there's a lot to choose from. But I think it started out kind of, and I use this term very, 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 very loosely, like the bastardized grape or the, you know, stepbrother. I use that. Don't
sure.
send me emails. But you know, it was kind of that grape for a while under the foot of the Cabernet Sauvignon, which of course is still grapes. And I think it really, really came. You know, out and became a really, really good grape by itself, not one, you know, in a Bordeaux blend per se, but by itself over the past 15 or 20 years. It took really for that amount of time. And I mean, and it's still something that consistently sells. If you look at, probably you would see Gab, of course, being the first top selling grape, and probably right under that would be Merlot, you know, of red. So I think that's a compliment to the Mendoza Valley and Mendoza growing and wine producers and Chilean, of course, that are making the Malbec. And I think also the one thing you'll see about that is that people will not, you know, immediately raise the prices like everybody does as soon as they get, you know, the cachet, and as soon as people are out there buying it and they see the uptick of maybe, you know, from let's say 10,000 cases to 30 or 40, you know, immediately they go, oh, okay, now I can, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's the beauty of the growing region for Malbec. So I think you're going to see that over the next couple of years. And I was going to say, the Syrah, it's kind of a nice thing to see an offering of a Syrah, especially reserve from Argentina. It's kind of, like I was saying before, it's kind of unheard of, and it's nice. It's actually It's a great addition to your profile here. The other thing I was going to also kind of chime in about was, as I was noticing all the wines that you offer, the Australian wines, I just wanted to kind of, you know, tail back into that for a second. There is a nice variety and a good amount of Australian wines, and I guess that's because of the fact that you initially started out with Australian wines. So to distinguish between, you have the Signature Series, which I guess are the, you know, of course, a little nicer to step up, per se, from the other, the Classy and so forth. And, you know, typically they do, in Australia, they do like the Shiraz Cab, which you have the Seduction, which is the Shiraz Cab. I wanted to just get an idea where you went with coming out with the Signature, and what was the idea behind it, and did you, was it just solely to have a premium wine available, or was there something behind that?
No, you know, we took two different routes that I think are different from the traditional wine company. When we started the business, you know, we looked at the entry level group of wines from most wineries out of Australia was a Chardonnay, a Shiraz, a Merlot, and a Cabernet. And
right.
You know, we said, no, we don't necessarily want to do that. I'm not someone to say that we didn't want to buck the trends. Chardonnay still is the biggest white wine, you know, that's drank in the United States. But you know, we said, okay, from our entry level standpoint, you know, we wanted to add a couple things that are unique to Australia, and we focused in. We do the Chardonnay and the Shiraz, and both of those are cool climate from the region of Victoria. So they're from one specific state. They're not from all across all of Australia, and most of them actually are single vineyard wines, but that's a different story.
Right.
And then the we added in, I guess about 5 years ago, the off-dry style Riesling. Australia does Riesling in a more austere, less sweet style. And we went with a little hint of sweetness to it, but still very dry, not bone dry. And it's just a nice, refreshing, beautiful tasting lime-infused wine. And then on the red side, to complement what we had with the Shiraz, we went with a Grenache Shiraz Mourvèdre blend. And the three letters they use on that is a GSM.
Yes.
To try to make it easier for everybody down there, because it's pretty hard to keep learning how to spell Mourvèdre. But the GSM blend, you know, every year, my winemaker down there is named Keith Bryan, and Keith is a former pilot, and he actually went over to Bordeaux and then over into Burgundy to be trained in winemaking. And so he's got a lot of French winemaking roots, and one of his favorite wines is the Rhone-style red blends that
mm-hmm.
are, you know, from the southern and northern Rhone area. And so what we end up doing is, you know, on our GSM from Australia, it is a bit of the, you know, the rich flavor from Grenache, which is that rich cherry flavor,
right,
kind of almost into Kirsch, like a Kirsch liqueur flavor, and
right.
then it's combined with you know, with some kind of bold Shiraz and some Mourvèdre that's got a little bit darker tannins to it, but it makes it a little bit more of a medium-bodied, a little lighter of a red than a heavier red like a Shiraz or, you know, or back to the Malbec.
Right.
And it's just a very complex blend. Every year we switch it up a little bit. One year it was a third, a third, a third. The next it was 40%, 30 and 25. And it just changes every year. But it allows my winemaker, who's a great master blender, to
mm-hmm.
be able to take three diverse lots, bring them together, and make a better wine out of it. So that's that's what we focus on the Classic Series. So we've got, you know, we've got these two wines, the Riesling and the GSM, that are a little different, but great values for the money. And then the Australian Chardonnay and Australian Shiraz that are both from Victoria and more cool climate. And then when, you know, when we said, okay, what are we going to do besides that? We said, you know, the thing that we found when we started looking at small producers in Australia, because we buy all of our stuff in small lots from independent people down there, is that
right.
In each different region, Australia is a country about the size of the United States. So it literally has, and it can have, a depth of places that make different types of wine all across it, and that wine is best suited for all across it. So what we said is we're going to focus in on a few regions that we think are a single vineyard in that specific region that does the grape that they're the most known for. And so we went to a couple of them. You know, we didn't go to the biggest ones. We didn't go to the Barossa Valley because there's a lot of Barossa Valley Shiraz out there. You know, so we went to the place that I find my favorite Shiraz in Australia is from is the McLaren Vale. And the McLaren
right.
Vale region is known for Shiraz. It has a big body to it. Kind of envelops your whole mouth and coats it, and then it just smooths off with a light finish. And, you know, that's so we do a McLaren Vale Shiraz. We went to the Yarra Valley, which is just north of the city of Melbourne, where our headquarters is down in Australia. And we did a
right.
Yarra Valley Chardonnay. And that's a little cooler climate. They also make some sparkling wines there. But, yeah, the focus in on our signature series is just these different regions. And, you know, all of our lot sizes that we do are small, you know, around the 500 to 1,000 cases. And each one of the vintages changes just a little bit, but it focuses in on that region. So you get to know the terroir of that region. And it also, like you said, gives us, you know, a step up where my winemaker, Keith, gets to work with vineyards, independent vineyards all across the country of Australia to bring these wines in.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about the wines. And we're going to go on to our Heard It Through the Grapevine, our industry updates. If you like, if you want to stay on and listen in, that would be great. That was Chris Cribb from Marquee Artisan Wines, everyone. And I want you to go out to your local wine retailer and ask for the variety of different wines that you'll hear about on the rest of the show. Or you can go to www.marquee.com and order the wines as well. Chris, I really want to thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Sure, Stu. It's been a pleasure to be on tonight. And I wanted to throw a quick shout-out. We've got an event going on down in your neck of the woods coming
up please do.
On this Friday. Marquee and Quattro Leone, the Italian wines from Piedmont, are sponsoring the Art Basel event at the Wolfsonian Museum on Friday
yes.
from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., and we'll have both the Barbera d'Asti and the Monferrato Bianco being poured for everyone that's going to be there. So if you're in the neighborhood, look us up and stop by.
Excellent. Everyone that heard that, if you're going to be here, do it. All right, Chris. Thank you so much.
Sure,
have
no
a great
problem.
Evening.
All right.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Okay, on to my Heard It Through the Grapevine industry updates. From the Piedmont region of Italy comes Marquee Artisan's Italian wines, Quattro Leone Monferrato Bianco and Quattro Leone Barbera d'Asti. Ask for them at your local retailer or www.marquee.com. Okay, this article is from the Napa Valley Register. The article is called Diageo in Bordeaux. It's by Dan Berger. Here's an excerpt. The image of great red wine aging carefully in a cellar is more a story of Bordeaux and its wine trade than any other wine in the world. And the story out of Europe last week is a possible precursor to the collapse of the entire system under which Bordeaux and all wine have lived for decades. The wire service, Agence France Press, carried a story that said Diageo Chateau and Estates would abandon the sale of Bordeaux wine immediately. I confirmed that story on Monday, and already I'm hearing repercussions from the wine trade of possible price in many sectors. C&E is dumping a lot of its inventory, said one former executive with the company, who was there when it was still owned by Joseph Siegerman Sons. They have millions of dollars worth of Bordeaux of various vintages, and they are liquidating everything. One source said he thought the retail value of the wine was in the $200 million range. Chateau and Estate has all but controlled the red Bordeaux wine business since 1974, when the company assisted the district and its distribution at a time when Bordeaux houses were suffering full sales and low prices. C&E exiting the business may terrible repercussions for retailers and wholesalers and may harm the financial infrastructure of Bordeaux itself. C&E is a subsidiary of British drinks giant Diageo. Okay, my thought on that. I agree wholeheartedly with the assertion that C&E, in effect, Diageo, dumping or liquidating all the Bordeaux creates a domino effect on many levels for wholesalers and retail. It will create an uncertainty and instability in the Bordeaux market, as well for French wines in general. I don't know how this is going to shake out, but I'm going to tell everybody to stay tuned because things will get interesting. Next up is from the Missourian, and it's entitled Missouri University Established an Experimental Winery by Eileen Davis. Here's an excerpt. MU has recently established an experimental winery to test grape varieties and growing practices in the state. Keith Strigler, director of the Institute for Continental Climate Viticulture and Enology, said wine at the winery will allow us to do experiments on winemaking. Equally important is the ability to know is to now do viticulture experiments from the field to the final product, he said. There will be opportunities for sensory analysis, where wine tasters will evaluate how the experimental practices affected the final product. To be able to determine the impact of any practice done at a vineyard is very important, Strigler said. Until a teaching winery is built, the experimental winery will also be used to teach students interested in viticulture. My thoughts? I think that wine can truly be almost made anywhere in the whole world. I'm all for the expansion of viticulture everywhere. I'm confident it'll do well in Missouri, and you know, this just gives you an example of how people can make and produce wines literally anywhere. Remember, if you have any questions, I have answers. So call me at 1-646-381-4860 or email me at info@stewthewineguru. So now let's talk about some great value-priced wines.
From Marquis Artisan Wines, Wines of Spain, comes Bodegas La Purísima, Old Hands Monastrell, Old Hands Sauvignon Blanc, Trapillo Old Vines Monastrell, and an organic line from Old Hands, Sauvignon Blanc, and Monastrell. Ask for Marquis Artisan Wines, Old Hands, and Trapillo at your local wine retailer.
So every week I choose a red and white wine that I recommend for the weekend or for any occasion. This week's red is a 2006 Charles Cru Cabernet Sauvignon. This is a blend cab. It's 85% Cabernet, 6% Petit Verdot, 3% Syrah, 2% Malbec, 2% Cabernet Franc, 1% Petit Syrah, below. Wine Spectator rated this 91 points. I agree on this one. Notes on this are cocoa and licorice with long tannins. This is great red for any occasion. Average price you'll find it for about $24. My white wine pick of the week is a 2007 Commentini Pinot Grigio. It's a light, crisp Italian Pinot Grigio with aromas of huntable. This is great for fish or chicken, and you should be able to find it for $14.
Marquis Artisan Wines California Series. Marquis Classy Sauvignon Blanc and Classy Zinfandel. Ask for Marquis Artisan's Classy Series at your local wine retailer or go to www.marquis.com. From the Mendoza region of Argentina, Marquis Artisan brings you Caligari wines. Staccato, Malbec Cabernet Sauvignon, Gracioso, Torrontes, Pianissimo, Malbec Rosé, and the Reserve Series, Caligari Reserve Malbec, Reserve Syrah, and Reserve Bernarda. Ask your local retailer for the Caligari wines from Marquis Artisan or go to www.marquis.com. If you want to find out more about me, just Google Stu the Wine Guru. You can find the websites, videos, articles, and shows I'm currently part of. Speaking of articles and reviews, I'm writing wine articles and reviews for Yahoo and The Examiner, so look for those as well. Wine 101 video series that can be viewed on both YouTube or my website, so check those out. Okay, so let's go on to where you can go to get great wine and food. My restaurant pick of the week is from the great state of Texas in the city of Frisco, and it's called the Fortuna Grill. The address, 8549 Gaylord Parkway, number 103, Frisco, Texas. If you want amazing, authentic Italian cuisine and a great white wine list, do not miss the opportunity to try Fortuna Grill. Great pizzas, pastas, specialty dishes. It's small, it's quaint, it's casual, but it's a great value. Prices ranges from $11 to $30. Call 972-335-1803. Upcoming events for my fellow wine enthusiasts to check out and get to. Will you be in Florida? If so, in Coconut Grove on the 9th and 10th of January is the Taste of the Grove. It's in Peacock Park. All the best Grove restaurants and wine producers come out, so go check it out. This is the premier event for and wine lovers here in Florida. For more information, go to www.thegreattasteofthegrove.com.
From Portugal, Marquis Artisan Wines brings you Clement Vino Verde Reserva. Ask for Clement Vino Verde Reserva at your local wine retailer or go to www.marquis.com.
Well, that's our show for tonight. I want to thank everyone for calling in. Perfect. Listen, I have to give you a couple.
I just take it easy.
Right. You know, and they're like, really pushing, like, mid-flow, like, really pushing.
I mean, you know, it seems like there's a breakdown all the way around from everybody. And no call to tell you.
He called me up. I called her at 1:20 because I was asking a question.
Right.
You know, before I got there, because I wanted to ask somebody in room to sit. You saw something called sit. I wanted to ask her if I should put somebody in the ER or whatever. You know, and
you want to call you? Okay. All right, I'm ordering, just ordering us one, you know, one bacon cheeseburger, right? What are we usually getting?
Just one bacon cheeseburger.
Okay. called about 5 minutes ago. I was just holding on for I wanted to place an order for pickup. This is Stu. Okay, what happened there? Okay, no problem. I understand. So I'm just gonna get one bacon cheeseburger, but medium rare, with cheddar, no lettuce or tomato, two coleslaws, let me get a fries well done, and a order of cheesecake. No. That'll do. Thanks so much.
Hey, baby.
Hello?
Hey, baby. Yes, I placed
you. Give me a second.
Back.
No problem. Sometimes I have to, like, get the speakerphone going before I start talking, because otherwise, you know.
Right.
I don't like talking without the speakerphone.
Right.
No, because I figured then you can, you know, start going to, you know, wherever you have to go to pick up and stuff.
Right, okay.
Well, yeah, it's just like a little, you know, a little bit bizarre in the world, you know? It's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to be here a little while, I'm going to be a little late, I'm going to be, you know, or I'm just to take care of some stuff or whatever. You know, and I'm just going, okay, no problem, you know, but, you know, to not show up, it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, like you think she's gonna start seizing herself out or whatever. But you know, it's like it's one thing to think that, you know, oh yeah, you know, you don't need any help, you know, you need to know everything, you know. But I don't know everything, I'm sure. I probably don't even know things I don't know. Yeah, I might know how to do patient care and give out the patients, and you just have like I'm sure it's like I haven't in the book up close and personal to know whether I had questions or not.
Right.
Like, I need the book so I can look at it and have it for a couple of days and, you know, chill out. Otherwise, what's going to happen is I'm going to get it and have questions, which I don't want to do. I want to have my questions while I'm still really bad up in charge of this situation here. You're not coming back. It's going to have today. You're going to be finished. You know, it's 6 o'clock. Go take a break. You're not feeling that good. Go downstairs. And be at that report time, which is 7.
Right.
And then 6 o'clock now. You take a break for half an hour. All right, Jay, stay a little longer. Save the injury for me. It's over.
Right.
I'm going to put you in EKG. And I'm going to give patients. And then it's over. It's finished.
Exactly.
And don't get yourself upset. It's ridiculous, you know. And you don't need that. And that's not going to happen. You know, a lot of them, like, fear what Ms. Bass is, you know, going to do. It's like, in a way, it she comes off a little bit like, instead of helping some of them, they feel like, should we need to catch them?
Yeah.
She's waiting, you know, to catch that. And she has, like, once in a while, like, some weird shit, like, her one daughter that reminds me of how she says stuff like, I don't know what you're doing. Like, and she's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
What does that mean, you know? You know, it's not on drugs or anything.
It's situated.
She had some issues in her body for, you know, depression or... you know, certain situations, but I can tell she's not on drugs.
Right, she's insinuating.
She's insinuating stuff that, you know, I don't know if she gets stuff into the weight count, you know, or what, you know. But, okay, you know. She wanted to send her back to the lab. She felt like she didn't get it, you know, and
yeah.
I'm like, there's no reason for the lab.
Right, right.
Her closely the past 2 days. I told her, I instructed her on how to, you know, organize herself, and she's doing really well.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I'm like, this is how you do it. She did fine today, and she did fine yesterday. So I'm watching her.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I just find it really, you know, odd. And then I went so bad, I didn't answer the phone. They get that stupid message about coming in for a meeting.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to do, you know, was come in for another meeting tomorrow.
Yeah. Understandably.
Their meetings are freaking never ending. So, if you work there in the
right.
office, you go from morning to all day long and go from one meeting to the next.
Right.
And talk and brainstorm.
Kind of ridiculous.
Huh?
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, so I get at that level, you know. You go to meetings, you brainstorm, you figure out what you're going to do, then you go to another meeting, after that, you sit and brainstorm. How are we going to stop the students from going away early when vacation? Oh, let's have a round ball. We're going to throw a party. We're going to have an award ceremony, all these things so that they're not absent.
Right.
You know, this is what they have in date, you know.
Great.
Crazy. But, you know, they have one meeting, I told you, like, the day that I, you know, was reading the thing, I was on the computer and I was outside the desk, they're having a meeting. One after, you know, they're talking about this.
Yeah,
that's the day they're doing a good portion of the day.
Oi.
Crazy. It's crazy. It just is. It's fucking boring as hell.
I got a lot of
energy.
Yeah.
By the time you know it, half the day is already due, and you've been, like, it should be, right?
Right.